think the greatest problem that we face at Christmas time is the domestication of Christmas. When Christmas is seen primarily as a nice little sentimental family day, something essential is being missed. Christmas is, I would argue, a subversive feast from a Christian standpoint. Look in the Gospel of Luke, the great Christmas story. We read it at Mass and at Sunday services all over the Christian world. That's a very confrontational story. It begins by invoking Quirinius, who's the Roman governor of Syria, and Caesar Augustus, who's the king of the world. And Caesar's doing, Luke tells us, a paradigmatically powerful thing. He's declaring a census of the whole world. Well, that's what powerful people did. You take a census of your kingdom. That means you can tax your people more effectively. You can draft them. You can control them. This is a very worldly, lordly figure. But then Luke is telling us, I'm not interested primarily in him. He's an old king. I know their game. I'm interested in this weird new baby king that's arriving. And now the story of Jesus unfolds. He's being born, not in a palace. That's where Caesar Augustus would be. But Luke is saying the real king, the new king, he's not even room for him in the Bethlehem hostel. He has to be born in a cave. More to it, they wrap him up in swaddling clothes and they lay him in a manger. Who was the freest person in the ancient world? It would have been Caesar Augustus. He could do whatever he wanted. He was the rangiest figure. His will, he could speak at Rome, it would be done in Syria, it would be done in Spain. He was the freest figure. But the real king, Luke is saying, is actually wrapped up in swaddling clothes. He's a little tiny baby, too weak even to raise his head. And more to it, he's wrapped up in these swaddling bands. What's the point? The true king is not the one who has rangy worldly power. The true king is the one who is bound to the other in love, who becomes weak for the sake of the other. Not the one who's well protected in his palazzo, in his palace, but the one who's willing to become vulnerable in love. He's placed in a manger, which is the spot where the animals come to eat. Who is the best fed figure in the ancient world? It would be Caesar Augustus. In his palace on the Palatine Hill, he could snap his fingers, get whatever he wanted. He was the best fed figure in the ancient world. But the real king, the real emperor, Luke is saying, is not the one who feeds himself, but the one who's placed in the manger so that he becomes food for the world. That's meant to be an anticipation of Jesus' whole life, climaxing at the Last Supper when he says, "This is my body, this is my blood. I'm food and drink for you." That's the real life. That's the good life. I love the detail in Luke's account of the angels. Again, we get kind of sentimental about the angels. We shouldn't. In the Bible, the typical response to an angel is fear. It's not, "Oh, isn't that nice?" The typical response to an angel is fear. People are overwhelmed because this supernatural reality is broken into the world. Angels always say, "Don't be afraid." Implication, they are afraid, right? So an angel appears to the shepherds and they are afraid. The angel says, "I've got good news for you." He's the first evangelist. "I'm announcing this good news that this figure's been born who is Christ the Lord. He's the anointed one." That's code language. The anointed one was the king. A new king has been born. Not that old one in Rome. Not a worldly king, but this new one who's a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes and laid in a manger. That's the real king. Go visit him. Then, Luke says, there appeared with this angel a whole host of angels. The word in Greek there is stratias. Our word strategy and strategic comes from that. Stratias means an army. An army. So we say a host. That's what it means. Who had the biggest army in the ancient world? Caesar Augustus. That's why he was most powerful. That's why he was the rangiest. That's why he was the best protected. He had the biggest army in the ancient world. But his army, Luke is saying, is nothing compared to the army of this baby. The baby's got the real army, the army of angels. And they have as their weapons the weapons of heaven, which are not the pathetic worldly weapons, but of love and compassion and forgiveness and nonviolence, which is the power that makes the universe. And this baby king is in charge of that angelic army. You see what I'm saying here? Christmas is a subversive feast. That story is a subversive story. What it's saying is, which army are you with? Which king do you follow? Are you going to follow Caesar or all his thousands of successors down to the present day? And most of us sinners will say in different ways, yeah, I'm with him. I want to be well protected. I want to be powerful. I want to be rangy. I want to live in a palace. I want to have protection. That's the good life. Luke is saying, okay, that's a choice. But the choice that God wants you to make is to march with that baby king and his angelic army, which means not the way of worldly success, worldly power, worldly comfort. It's the way of love and compassion and nonviolence. Which army are you with? That's the question of Christmas. And that's why the message of Christmas finally is a deeply subversive one. Don't domesticate it. Don't turn it into a nice little family feast. Now, it is that. I'm all in favor of families gathering Christmas. Nothing in the world wrong with it. But we shouldn't reduce it to that. We should allow its spiritual power to come shining through.